Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show. It's February 24th, 6 p.m. Pacific Time, and we're broadcasting live from Seattle, Washington. I'm your host, Christina De Jesus, and I'm joined by my brother in the martial arts and co-host, Sifu Robert. Sifu Bob, how you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great. You know, there's a couple things. It's going to be a fun show. There's a couple things I have to mention, like I always do. Every show, somehow, one of us shows their age. And last night, it was you. You and Lynn doing karaoke to the Carpenters.
Are you jealous, Bob?
Yeah, I am, actually. But I never got an answer. What song?
Oh, which one that we sang together? I don't remember. There was like five
several.
Of them. Yesterday Once More was one of them. So,
oh, there was more than one. Oh, that helps you out a lot.
Yeah.
And there's another, you know, I always kid Sifu that sometimes when we do numbers, she says, "Let me get a calculator." And I kid her that she's the only Asian in the world that still needs a calculator. Well, last week we were doing Alan Woodman's show, Sidekick Talk Radio, and we have a running joke. She stayed with me for like 5 days in August, and she one time said, "I'm what are you 10 years older than me?" When I'm really only two. Well,
oh,
I was kidding with Alan and telling him how young he was, and he was only 23, and I said, "I'm not much older than you. I'm only 24." Well, Sifu pipes up and says, "What's that make me, 14? And I texted her right away and said, "Well, now you choose the time to be able to add and subtract in your head."
Sorry.
I was mortified.
Oh, gosh. We also have Lynn Yancha with us. She is the chief host of Century Health Talk, another show here on the Seika Network. And she's also the co-founder of the Seattle Snapdragons Bullwhip Enthusiast Group here in Seattle. How you doing, Lynn?
Right now, I'm doing just fine. I can't wait to ask some questions later on.
All right. Well, we have a really great show for our listeners today. We have world-renowned bullwhip performer, bullwhip expert, bullwhip maker, Adam Winrich, that'll be with us. Well, actually, he's going to be with us right now. How you doing, Adam?
Yeah, I'm doing good.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us today. I know that you've got a really busy schedule at a Renaissance Fair gig over there in, is it Arizona?
Yep, that's right. Gold Canyon, Arizona, just east of Phoenix.
Awesome. So thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us today. And I'm hoping that all of the bullwhip enthusiasts out there are listening too, or even calling in a little bit later to talk with you or just say hi. Our phone number here is 347-677-0699. So if you've got any questions, anytime, give us a call. Do it soon because I don't want to keep Adam for too long. He's had a long day, so I kind of want to like get the show over before we all die because I'm pretty tired too. We also have a chat board underneath the Blog Talk Radio Show marquee. You just got to scroll down a little bit if you're listening live online, and you'll find the chat board there. So if you don't want to call in, just go ahead and type on the chat board. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get started with some of our shout-outs and Bob's Weird News, and then we'll get to our interview with bullwhip expert Adam Winrich. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and start. Okay, Bob?
Absolutely.
Since this is a show all about bullwhips and the art of bullwhip artistry and stuff like that, I want to send a shout-out out there to all the bullwhip cracking groups out there on Facebook. There's a bunch of them out there, but I just want to send a shout-out to the Extreme Sports Whip Cracking group on Facebook, Worldwide Whip Cracking, Whipcracking Enthusiasts, Sports Circus and Performance Whipcrackers Group, the Pinoy Whip Enthusiasts, and they're from the Philippines, the 768 Mile Per Hour Club, the Indiana Jones Gear, Hats, Whips, etc. group, and there's a lot more there on Facebook, but those are the ones that I belong to. So, oh, and then there's my Facebook group, the Snapdragons Bullwhip Enthusiasts. So, shout out to all those people. And I also want to send a quick shout out to a few Latigo y Daga practitioners, the whip and dagger practitioners. I want to send a shout out to Guru Tom Meadows, Anthony DeLongis, Jeff Finder, and Ron Liu. Very, very skilled people, not only at whip performance, but also using the whip as a martial arts tool. I also want to send out a shout out to the whip performers out there, such as Robert Dante. There's also Reina Hayashi in Japan, Todd Rex, Kendall Wells, James Maxwell, Gary Deer, Louis Fox. And there's so many performers out there. So shout out goes to you guys. I just had to put together these notes really quick. So I'm sorry if I missed any names as far as skilled whip performers, but shout out goes to you. Not least, I want to just quick shout out to whip makers, David Morgan, Joe Strain, Brian Nemeth, Gail Nemeth, Rhett Kelly, Terry Jacka. Who else am I missing? Peter Jack, Joe Wheeler, Greg DeSay, Ben Scott, going off the top of my head because I have to write this down. Lauren Wickline, can't forget Lauren. Bernie Wojcicki, and I'm messing up his name. But thanks, Bernie, for all your help in my pineapple knot difficulties. I was having a bear of a time with that. Ryan Galdamez, Maya Espinosa, Mike Murphy, the list goes on and on. I know there are so many very skilled whip makers out there, so this shout-out is for you. So, yeah, so that's shout-outs for whip makers and performers. I just want to do a shameless plug, though, on a book that was put out by Guru Tom Meadows of Latigo y Daga. So if there
I think her Skype just fell out.
Oh, I think she fell. I thought that happened.
That's all. She's right in mid-sentence and just goes away.
I hope she figured that out, that she's actually not talking anymore. Or she is still talking, probably, but she's not on.
That's right.
On
she's
the
talking
air.
To air.
Wow, I don't. I have no idea what happened there.
I thought I did something. I kept looking at the board. I'm like, did I push a button?
Yeah, now how long was I
was,
gone? How long was
I thought
I gone?
It was something I said. About 20 seconds.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I figured something weird was going on because my chat board disappeared. It said that somebody else was on there, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on. But anyway, Latigo y Daga, whip fighting. If you haven't checked out the Filipino fighting whip book, it's on Amazon. It's written by Guru Tom Meadows, and it goes over the applications of the short whip, or the latigo, for martial arts applications. And a lot of the concepts come from Filipino martial arts. But last I checked, there's only two left in stock, so get them while they're gone. So, okay, that's it for me for now. So let me turn it over to Bob real quick.
Well, you have one more. That's okay, but we can get back to it.
Just reminding me.
Oh, there she goes again.
She's still there.
Oh, is she?
I'm here.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Wishful thinking, I guess.
All right. So this is just an announcement for an upcoming seminar. It's in July. And this seminar is being hosted by Master Ron Kozakowski. And this is a Filipino Indigenous Arts Retreat. And it's going to be July 19th, 20th, and 21st. And it's going to be conducted by Master Ron Kozakowski and Tuhon Romel Tortal. And I'm just going to go over this really quick. This particular seminar is going to be held at 849 Warwick Turnpike, and that's in Hewitt, New Jersey, 07421. And the link to all this information is actually on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. So if anyone is in that New Jersey area and want to check out this Filipino martial arts retreat. Just go to the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. They're going to be going over, Guru Ron is going to be going over the use of Filipino kuntao hand movements and footwork along with monitoring your opponent. And there's also going to be a lot of coverage on the ground fighting aspects of kuntao and also knife. They're going to be going over a lot of knife techniques. And that's going to be taught by Master Ron Kazakowski. Tuhon Romel Tortal of Pikiti Tirsia, Kali and Dumog will be going over double stick, double blade, single stick, and single blade, and also single knife, double knife, and lugod, which is a karambit. And he's also going to be going over the Malayu Sibat, or the spear, panggamot, empty hand defense, and dumog, the wrestling. So go ahead and check it out. That's the Filipino Indigenous Arts Retreat, 849 Warwick Turnpike, Hewitt, New Jersey. Links on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. Yay.
Now, I do want to point out that was supposed to be mine, but I texted her today and just said, you're so much better at these names than I am.
What's a Malayu sea bat? Oh, jeez.
I looked at that and went, hey, seafood, this one's yours.
All right, Bob, let's go ahead and go to your cool shout-out, because I love
Okay, I have one going out to Sensei Elaine Yamano, which
right.
She has so much. I think she's on. I think we give a shout-out to her, like, every week.
Yeah.
She's got a kata showdown coming out. This will be held at Yamano's Shorenru Karate in Chino on February 27th at 7 p.m. At this event, all you have to do is perform your kata for your team. The team with the most points gets first choice of the prizes. Everyone that attends will receive a prize. This is great experience for all who attend and gets them out in front of people, social skills, and teamwork. Remember that these events are free to all. It gives great value to a student's training. So if you're in the Chino area, please try to attend and show your support to Yamano Shorenru Karate. Now, I'm going to keep this short because this is like a page and a half.
Okay.
As a parent, you know, I have two kids, and they were always well-behaved growing up. And this is up in, I think this is up in your area. I don't know if you've ever heard of this restaurant, but this is an Italian bistro called Sogno Divino. And they had a customer, Laura King, in there with like four kids. And her kids were well-behaved. So what's the restaurant do? The restaurant gives her a discount for having well-behaved children. That's, like, unheard of. Now, it wasn't a huge discount, but it was about, 6, 7, almost 7%. I think I figured out to 6.8%. It was around $4.
Uh-huh.
Every little bit helps, and just my shout-out to the restaurant for doing such a good deed for a mother of four.
Wow.
That was when I read that. That was so cool of them to do that for her.
Right, I know. Now, what happens if you bring in like little hellions? I wonder. They don't give you a discount.
They charge you more.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
That was an absolute trip.
Right.
So on to my weird laws. These are all
weird
of laws. Iowa.
Iowa.
Yeah.
Okay.
Iowa.
Okay.
In Iowa, dancing in the morning is illegal. You cannot dance in the morning in Iowa. And usually because of a religious thing or sacred thing or whatever, a lot of these laws will be you can't do this on a Sunday. This does not specify any day of the week. This is whenever. Every day of the week, can't dance in the morning. So after 12 noon, that's fine.
Whoa.
Now,
wait a minute. So how do they police that? I mean,
how do they police the laws that I come up with?
I don't know. Hey, Adam, where are you from? I thought you were from Iowa. Are you from?
No, I'm from Wisconsin.
Oh, that's right. Wisconsin. Okay. All right.
You know, Sifu, when we go have a drink together, you know, sometimes, especially if you know the tavern and you're in the bar, you tend to run a tab until you're done for the night, then you pay it off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in Iowa, it says, don't plan on running a tab. It's illegal.
Oh, man.
I know. We're way out of luck.
I know, right? That makes for a long night at the bar.
It does.
It does.
In Iowa, let's see, a man that has a mustache cannot kiss a woman in public.
Well, that sucks.
In Fort Madison, Iowa, firemen are required. Now, this is the weird part. Firemen are required to practice for 15 minutes before attending a fire. How do they know?
Awesome. No way.
Now, this is where I'd love to live in Iowa. It is illegal to accept a gratuity or tip.
Whoa. Wow.
In Iowa, kisses may not last more than 5 minutes.
Where's my that sucks button?
Well, that sucks.
There it is.
In Iowa, tanning bed facilities must warn customers of risk of getting sunburned.
Whoa.
I thought that was just common sense.
Yeah, I thought it was too, but
it's like, don't use a hairdryer in the bathtub.
Right.
No kidding, really.
Well, you know, I do remember reading someplace about somebody suing a tanning bed facility for whatever second-degree burns that she got, and jumped up and down about how the facility didn't warn her about the inherent dangers of suntanning. And they were like, what? And she won. So,
well,
maybe.
Just like that woman that sued McDonald's for $1 million because she spilled hot coffee on herself, and it didn't say anywhere that the coffee was hot.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, right? Hey, Lynn, do we have a caller?
He's just listening right now.
Oh, okay. Hi, listener. Area code 818, listener. Thanks for listening. Okay.
Okay. Go ahead.
Cool. Well, I guess he's... Oh. Yeah, he's just listening. It's Brandon. He's just listening.
Nice.
Okay. Was that it for Weird Laws?
That was it.
Aw. Oh, my goodness. Well, that was Bob's
Weird News.
All right. Well, real quick, before we take a really quick PSA break for our listeners and getting right into the interview after the PSA break, I want to do our Trivia of the Week. Now, for those of you that aren't familiar with our Trivia of the Week, every week, when I remember, every week we send out a trivia question, and the first caller with the first correct answer gets to win, I guess, a chance to be a guest co-host with me and Sifu Bob. So here is our trivia question of the week. According to Indiana Jones lore, what year did Indiana Jones acquire his own first bullwhip? Now, those of us here that are already on the air are not allowed to answer it because we're already on the air. And Bob, are you still there? I thought I lost my
phone. I am still here.
All right. So let me repeat that again. According to Indiana Jones lore, what year did Indiana Jones require his own first bullwhip? Our phone number here is 347-677-0699. If you're the first caller that has the first correct answer, you get to win a spot to be a co-host with me and Sifu Bob on an upcoming episode. So, yay, that's it for the Trivia of the Week. 347-677-0699.
Oh, no, it's not. Wait a minute, Sifu. It's not the end of Trivia for the Week. I have my own trivia question.
You do? Okay.
Are you nervous?
Yes, I'm nervous.
You should be, because... And I want to put out there that Sifu Rusty is as honest as the day is long. But there is something, and I think Lynn may understand, her business partner may understand, her students may understand. I want to throw a question out. Now, you have to call in. Yeah, I'm not going to post this question or anything. So,
okay.
And hopefully we'll have a caller that can answer correctly. They will, as well, have a chance to be a caller on an up-and-coming show. Now...
Okay.
keep in mind how honest Sifu is. How do you know when Sifu Rusty isn't telling the truth? Our phone number, 347-677-0699.
And you say that I'm as honest as the day is long. There's only 24 hours in a day, buddy.
I know. We'll see if we get a caller.
We, I think we do. Area code 818.
Well, let's take that call.
Brandon. Well, Brandon, hit the one button. Brandon, is this you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, do you have an answer?
Yeah, I have an answer.
For which question?
For not yours. I don't even know yours.
Okay,
hey,
good.
I have an answer for my dad's.
Oh, okay. And
what would that
answer
be, Brandon?
What? Are we on the air?
We are.
Okay. All right, well, I already know the answer, but...
Well, read the question first, then give us the answer.
Okay, the question is, how do you know when Sifu Rusty is not telling the truth? And I answer,
when is that?
But I'm going to do an imitation of Rusty to how you know she's full of it, all right?
Oh, great.
This is my imitation.
Okay.
All right, she's on the phone, right?
Right.
Yo, what? I'm right in the middle of something, and, you know, I got to go. But, yeah, I got to let you go. But, yeah, I'll call you back. All right, yeah, I'll call you back. Yeah, no, I promise. Yeah, I'll call you back. Yeah, all right, yeah, I'll call you back. Yeah, no joke. Yeah, all right, bye.
Ding, 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 we have a winner!
Oh, my bill collectors aren't supposed to know about that.
And
oh,
he wants to be on the Lima Llama show.
Who does, Brandon?
Brandon.
Oh, all right.
Oh, okay.
Cool.
Sure.
Awesome.
Sure. Yeah, cool. All right, cool.
Cool.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you later.
Anyway, yeah, that's my contribution, and I'll see you guys later. Bye.
All right.
See you later, bud.
Bye.
All right, let's go ahead and just take a quick break for a couple PSAs, and then we're going to be right back with our interview with Mr. Adam Winrich. We'll be right back after this.
Some statistics are surprising. Some are unbelievable. And some are simply unacceptable. Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. Nearly 30%. And that's the average. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone, not just parents, but friends and neighbors and family members, to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, push them a little, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through. Because this is one statistic we simply can't afford to ignore.
You can do your part by going to boostup.org and sending an email, a text message, or even a wake-up call to a student at risk of dropping out. Go to boostup.org and provide the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
While cutting molding with a 12-inch dual-compound miter saw, while holding a newborn baby in your arms, when face-to-face with a congregation of alligators, with the ball in your hands and the entire freaking season on the line...
There are a million places you'd never consider texting, so why would you do it while driving? NASCAR driver Casey Kane here, asking you to please stop the text, and together we can stop the wrecks.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Get the message at stoptextstopwrecks.org.
And now, on with the show.
All right, we're back. This is the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show. Yeah.
I did not tell him to ad lib.
He did pretty good.
how was that for a little bit?
That was pretty good. I hope my students aren't listening. Sometimes
I hope all of them are.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, so if you're just tuning in, listeners, this is the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show with Restita and Robert. Our phone number here is 347-677-0699, and our special guest tonight is whip expert Adam Winridge. Thank you again for joining us, Adam.
You're welcome.
Awesome. Now, before we get started with the quote-unquote formal interview, now, can you tell us a little bit about the Guinness Book of World Records attempt that you did yesterday? Because I'm sure our listeners would want to know if they haven't heard already, because I didn't.
Sure. Well, to start out, I've set 9 different records for whip cracking. I kind of got my start after whip artist Robert Dante had a competition to set a Guinness World Record back in 2005. He used to have, and he set the Guinness World Record for most bull whip cracks in a minute 3 different times. So Dante kind of got me on the road to do that, and my goal has been to have, at some point, to hold each of the different records that Guinness has for whip cracking. So a new record came up last year, most flowers cut in half out of the mouth with a whip in a minute, and that was originally set by a street performer named Space Cowboy and his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And once I heard about that record, I decided to give it a try. So yesterday I did it with the help of Dakota Granados, and the old record was 31, and we believe we did 44 in a minute. And so now what we'll do is submit video and photos and all the other documentation to Guinness, and hopefully they should verify it as a record in a couple months.
That's awesome. Big applause. Yay.
Nice.
That's awesome. Oh, my goodness. You know, it'd be great to see video of that. That'd be really cool. Awesome.
If you look online, I think the newest video I posted, I did post a video of one of our rehearsals.
Okay.
I think it's just titled Precision Bullwhip Cracking. It's like the newest video on my YouTube channel, which is Adam CWM. So if you look that up, you see us doing it for a full minute. We didn't get 44 in that video. I think we cut 38 or so in that video, but it'd give you an idea of what it looks like.
Oh, very cool. I'll go check that out after the show. Well, it looks like we have someone that wants to answer the trivia question. We have Paul from area code 213. How you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Pretty good. So my call screener says you've got an answer to the trivia question.
Yeah, I read that that book, I think, when I was about 9 or 10, and I think it was 1922.
You got it. Awesome, awesome. Yay. Cool. Where's my
awesome.
Ta-da? There it is.
Yay.
Very cool. Awesome.
Say,
so, you know, if you want to, you just won a chance to be a co-host on an upcoming show. That is, if you want to be Paul.
Oh, hello?
Yeah.
There we go. I'm back.
Russ, are you there?
Hello?
Hey,
uh-oh.
Paul, are you
what
there?
Happened?
I think your Skype dropped out. Hey, Paul, you know, you want a chance, if you want to, you can be a co-host on one of the up-and-coming shows.
Oh, that could be cool, especially if you guys want to talk about whips.
Well, you want to hang out then?
Oh,
just hang out on the line and talk to Adam?
I have no
She's
idea
She's
what happened.
I
I'm back.
Well, Sifu, Paul wants to hang out. He wants to talk about whips.
Yeah, let's do this. Now, is this Paul? Which Paul is this?
Oh, it's Paul Nolan from Midwest.
That's what I thought. That's yeah. Hey, yeah. We'll keep you on the. We'll keep you on the line. You get to be part of the.
Oh,
get to be part of the co-host.
Excellent.
I just want to say, Paul, I was going to totally throw you in on all the shout-outs of whip makers, and because Lauren got in there. But I didn't quite get your name in there in time.
Yeah, I was just going off of the top of my head, and I was just like, oh my gosh! But thanks for calling in, Paul. Right on. So yeah, let's keep you on the line. Cool, cool, cool.
Oh,
get in here, Paul? You sound like you're far away from your speakerphone or something to that effect. Somebody was saying that they couldn't hear you from the chat room.
Oh, yeah, I think it dropped out a second ago. I couldn't hear anything for a minute. Sorry about that.
Oh, okay. But you still sound far away. That's what they were saying. That's it.
Oh, you know what? I'll call right back real quick and see if that'll set it.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, cool.
All right, talk to you a sec. Bye.
Okay. And Lynn will go ahead and just connect him when
put
he calls
back,
back. Yeah, area code 213. So right on. That's great to have Paul on the line. All right. So let's go ahead and get to our interview now. And congratulations to the Guinness Book of World Record attempt. So we're all looking forward to having that confirmed.
Absolutely.
With Guinness. That is so awesome. Now, I'm sure all of our listeners that are probably interested in whips or have no idea about whip cracking, but have seen your videos, would want to know, you know, what got you started in whips? What was your first thing that got you interested in whips, and how did you get training, or were you self-taught? So I guess we'll start with how did you get interested in the whip?
Oh, okay. I was interested in whips after watching Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. That was around about 1989, so a while ago. Then my dad made me a whip out of rope that I played around with for a while. And then I messed around with the whip, souvenir whip I got that was made out of vinyl. And sort of just played around with the handmade whips that either my dad made or that I made for a few years until I learned how to make better whips. And then I didn't really get any training, per se. The best I could do initially was just watch movies like Indiana Jones and The Man from Snowy River and try to copy those movies. And then a few years after that, I got a few videos, like The Art of the Bullwhip that the Western Stage Prop sells is a really good video. And I also got Whip Cracking Made Easy Part 2 with Alex Green and Mark Allen. So I started out with those videos. And it wasn't really until I started doing whips full-time about 2004 that I started traveling around and meeting other whip crackers. And then after that, I met other whip crackers at various conventions and learned from them. And then I've been to Australia 4 times, starting in 2007. So I also learned some whip cracking when I was over there.
Wow, very cool. Awesome. Because I've gotten some questions from people just here in Seattle. You know, they would get a hold of me through the Snapdragon site, and they'd be like, well, you know, is there anywhere else I can learn whip cracking in Washington? And, you know, and if not, where can I learn? And, you know, I'm also largely self-taught in that aspect, and so is Lynn. A lot of videos, a lot of your videos, as a matter of fact, because all I was doing was the overhead crack and the cattleman's crack for Kung Fu Whip. And I figured, you know, there's got to be something more interesting than just the overhead crack and the cattleman crack. And so I just got out there myself too and did the same, pretty much did the same thing you did. But I don't get enough time to practice as much as you do. So that's pretty cool. All right. And now I'm betting that there are a bunch of whip enthusiasts listening right now. But for the listeners that aren't familiar with whips, can you tell those listeners about the major types of whips and their differences? And maybe hopefully Paul can get back on and chime in as well. But what are the major types of whips and their differences?
Well, if you're an American, I would say the most common whip is the bull whip, mainly because that's what most people see in the movies, like Catwoman had a bull whip, Indiana Jones had a bull whip. A bull whip generally is, you know, has a short handle, it's one piece. The whip is braided right off the handle. Then other movie whips that you might be familiar with could be the sock whip, the Australian sock whip from say movies like The Man from Snowy River. Mm-hmm. There it has a long handle, and then the whip is actually made separate, and they're joined by a knot called a keeper's, kind of a lark's head knot at the end of the handle. So again, the handle and whip's made separate, kind of a long handle. And then those are the two main whips used nowadays for sport whip cracking. There are also signal whips, which are short whips with no real handle. The whole thing is flexible. Or black snakes, which are a slightly larger version of that. And those can be coiled up really small, but not that many people use them nowadays for sport whip cracking. Probably one of the more popular whips used for sport whip cracking right now is generically called, I suppose, the performance hybrid whip. I think that's one of the most popular name coined by Lauren Wickline and Paul Nolan. Lauren makes those. A few other whip makers are making that type of whip, has a PVC handle, and been really popular as sort of a hybrid between a sock whip with a long handle, but also a bull whip where the whip isn't joined by like a knuckle or by knots at the end of the handle. The whip comes kind of straight out the handle, And so the performance hybrid whip, I think the only other one to mention would be the Florida Cow Whip. I was in Florida back in December, and you'll see a fair few of those, where, again, the handle and whip's made separate, just like the stock whip or the performance hybrid whip, and usually has a wooden handle, and the whip fits into the end of the handle and is tied in through a hole that is drilled out the side of the handle. So you have a bull whip, stock whip, performance hybrid whip, black snake, and the Florida Cow Whip.
Awesome. Now, out of all of those styles, is there a particular style that you prefer to use the most?
Most of the time, I'm using stock whips. Mainly what got me practicing the most with whip cracking was when I saw a DVD that Mike Murphy sells called Dueling Whips. It was footage from the 1999 Australian Championships. And so I saw things done with two whips that I thought were impossible, like to see someone crack two whips behind their back at the same time. So that really floored me and inspired me to start practicing a lot more. I think I got a copy of that in 2003. So because they use stock whips, the long handle, a combination of the long handle, the keepers on the end, and also the fact that there's so many talented whip makers in Australia, and the competitions are so generally well attended that it's really driven up the quality of whips that you can find for like sport whip cracking in Australia. So mostly stock whips is what I'm using, trying to copy that style that I fell in love with. I also use the performance hybrid whips a lot. I both buy them and make some of them myself that I'll use in my show. I find nylon whips are good for the performing that I do because nylon's a lot less maintenance than leather.
Awesome. Now, what would, just out of curiosity, for because I fell in love with the whips when I first saw Zorro use one back in the day, and also with the Indiana Jones movies as well, and then learning Kung Fu Whip. But, you know, the only thing that I had going for me was just that overhead crack and the cattleman crack that I learned in the Kung Fu Whip and videos, and that was it. So with that said, what type of advice would you give to beginners that see whip cracking on TV or in a movie and they want to get into it? What would be, I guess, a wise word of advice for beginners?
For beginners, I would dare say buy the best whip you can. I do get a lot of questions from a lot of beginners. I think the hard part with whip cracking right now is that there is a lot of information out there with YouTube, so someone can go see like my videos or your videos or Chris Camp's videos or videos that Paul Nolan has posted. Like a lot of people have posted videos. There's a lot of information about what can be done with a whip out there that people can see. But maybe there's not as much information about, like, what whip will actually do it. Because there's so many there's so many people who go out, they'll buy a whip first. They spend $25 on a whip off of eBay. And that's only meant as a souvenir. It'd be like a four-strand swivel handle, wood handle, bull whip. And it's only meant as a souvenir. So then they go get the whip, like, I want to learn how to crack it. And then they'll go watch videos on YouTube and want to do that stuff. But unfortunately, they bought the wrong whip to do that. So the hard part kind of is, yeah, how much are you going to spend? So I guess for me, the best advice for a beginner that wants to take it seriously, I would say is be prepared to spend somewhere between $100 and $200 for a quality starting whip. For example, I think the Performance Hybrid Whip that Lauren Wickline sells is an excellent whip for beginners who want to get into sport whip cracking, and those cost about $145 plus shipping a piece. I think Paul can correct me on that later if I'm wrong. But so that's the hard part, I think, for beginners, is just getting a quality whip to start with so you can actually use that to follow along with the most of the information that is online.
That's wonderful.
Well, now that we're talking about beginners, Adam, what do you recommend? If somebody's going to pick up any kind of whip and want to crack it, what kind of safety gear is a must for the beginner?
Generally, as a beginner, I was limited on my safety gear. I guess when I started out as a kid, I would just go out with my shorts and a T-shirt, no shoes, no hat, no glasses, and I didn't know any better. But you learn quickly if you do that. But now, generally, the safety rules for a beginner is you want to wear long pants, long shirts, a hat, glasses, just because the whip is going very fast, and if you are really... It tends to happen if you're muscling the whip and you don't really know what to do and you assume that everything's in the wrist or you need a really strong motion, half the time you'll pull the whip back at you and it'll come back and hit you very quickly. So that's why you want like heavy pants, like denim pants and long sleeves, the hat and glasses to protect you. Probably the bigger thing about the beginner, being a beginner, like I get by probably practicing a lot, not using as much safety gear, maybe just having glasses on. Because most of the time when I'm practicing, I'm using the minimal amount of motion that I have to perform the move, so I'm not going all out every time. Part of that is, I suppose that happens in martial arts. If you pick up any weapon and you decide to go use your maximum speed right away, you're not exerting control. So if you start out slowly as a beginner and just try to learn how to control your whip and learn what fine movements make the whip move around and get in tune with that, mm-hmm. you'll be less likely to hurt yourself while you're learning.
Very cool.
Very cool. Yeah, one of my students this past summer came out to one of our whip gatherings out in a park, and she had a hat, but I think she had a tank top on and shorts. And I said, "Oh gosh, you know, you don't want that." And I said, "Well, you know, since you're here and you don't have any, you know, other clothes in the car, just be careful." Well, after the 2-hour practice, we came back together to kind of do our powwow at the end of class, and she looked like a man of war, hugged her leg. It was the worst thing ever. I was just like, see, didn't I tell you? So yeah, definitely beginners, you know, heed Adam's advice and do wear your eye protection and long sleeves, long pants. Awesome. Lynn, do you have any questions real quick?
Well, no, I just kind of wanted to also make a comment, the fact that as a beginner myself, now into intermediate, the cracking of the whip actually served as a positive feedback or you know, reinforcement. So everybody that I've seen that I've tried to teach the basic cattleman's crack are all whipping so quickly that it's actually cracking right next to their head. And I don't exactly know how to tell them, like, to slow down, because if they slow down too much, it's like it's not going to form that loop to make the crack in front. So I just kind of wonder how you could teach somebody something like that. And because words to me doesn't make any sense when I'm trying to explain to them, but I can show them. But to them, it has to be both.
Right. Well, yeah, I can quickly jump in there. I showed a fair few people how to do the cattleman's crack, and I just started in my show recently getting an audience member up and having them crack a whip, not on their own. I still hold their hand to do it. But how I've broken it down is a lot of people want to bring the whip up very slowly and then usually bring it down quickly, assuming that it's a quick motion down, it'll get its crack. So it's always the whip. When it is cracking by their head, that means that the whip really hasn't gotten all the way behind them to set up for a proper crack in front. The whip may be floating somewhere above their shoulder, and then when they bring it down, it cracks. So what I'll usually tell people is that the swing up with a whip has to be, that is just as important as the swing down. So it's like two equal halves of a hole. So I find when I'm doing the cattleman's crack, my hand is coming up just as fast as it's going down. So usually that advice hopefully gets people to stop slamming the whip down and bring it up too slowly. I found it's also important when you tell them to swing the whip up is that I'll tell people that when a whip leaves the ground, they should swing it fast enough so it's extended all the way in the air, and that is just swing it fast enough so it remains extended right when it leaves the ground all the way to when it's above their shoulder, and then they want to make sure that it's extended all the way in the air through there, and then once it gets behind them, then they can just bring it down slowly. Or about as fast as they lifted it up. The important part is having that extension all the way up in the air. And I think in one of my videos I posted the good whip cracking comes from good whip swinging. For example, if someone tends to get a lot of knots in their whip, that may be because they're not completely swinging the whip all the way around, because it is a flexible tool. So if you're not, don't have it extended all the way every time you're swinging it, you don't really won't know where it is and you won't have control of it. So usually, yeah, with beginners, you can get them to swing it all the way up in the air from when it leaves the ground to above their shoulder, let it get behind them, and then bring it down slowly. Those two tips tend to correct them most of the time. You can give it a try and see if it works.
Good.
Cool. Awesome advice. Did you get all that, Lynn?
Yeah, because I didn't know how to tell them, but I kept wanting to show them how to put it all the way extended in the back. But then again, of course, they have to look forward, because whenever they try to pull it back and all of a sudden, you know, look back, and then they basically bring it forward as hard as they can. I don't want their eyes getting caught. It's like,
right.
Oh.
Right.
I get so scared for them.
Yeah.
No, yeah, if you've heard stories of anyone that says, I mean, I'll hear stories, I'm sure Paul has heard stories of people saying they hit themselves with a whip, and then when they picked it up the first time and then never picked it up again. I think a lot of it comes from that initial throw of what you want to do of bringing it up slowly and bring it down quickly. And I know when I was starting out, the first whip that I made was out of leather. I just had shoelace on the end for a fall sort of cracker situation. I didn't know what a cracker was. So I was doing basically the same thing there and that we were talking about now, bringing it up slowly and down too quickly. And I used to think it was hitting my ear, but I think what it was doing, it was cracking near my head, and then pieces of the shoelace would break off and hit me in the ear.
Oh,
that little choice. But I think what you said about extended in the back always is important, but they can see if it's extended all the way in the front from the ground to when it leaves, when it gets above their shoulders. So that starts as a good reference. At least then you know that if they can have it extended all the way through there, that it's given enough momentum to then get it all the way back to them or all the way to the back.
Okay.
I think about the only time I've seen in Robert Dante's book, Let's Get Cracking, I think Dante doesn't talk about having the whip all the way extended behind you. I think his schematics or his pictures sort of show you lifting the whip up kind of in an S motion, and then it gets behind you and you throw it forward. That could come in handy. I think it's harder to learn, but it would come in handy if you're in like a tight setting. Like I know Dante is a variety performer and probably performs in lots of tight spaces with whips. So if you learn to do it there, it could come in handy in a tight space, but more than anything, if you're a beginner, you're better off learning in a big, wide open space or having as much space as you can so you don't have to sort of compromise your learning by having to adjust and not hitting, like, the ceiling or the table or a cat or whatever.
Kind of like yesterday, Lynn. We were trying not to – me and Lynn were at a friend's house yesterday.
Going off.
And Lynn brought out a couple snake, 3-foot snake whips, and because our friend wanted to see them and you know see how they crack and stuff. And yeah, there's a cat. And luckily, the cat was upstairs, but yes, there was a cat. But thanks for asking that, Lynn, because you know Lynn, bless your heart, by the way, Lynn. She's usually the first person that gets to the beginners by the time I get there, because I have to come from across town because I'm in martial arts class and I got to come from across town all the way out to our venues. And she's usually the first people that gets beginners started. So when I get to class, Lynn's already got these people going and stuff. And sometimes Lynn will come up to me and go, I'm having a hard time with this this person or that person not bringing the whip all the way back, or they're bringing it up too slow. You know, what do I do? And stuff like that. I bet Adam has a better way of explaining it than I do.
Most of these new students actually need a visual for some reason. As for me, do you remember Sifu? I couldn't do certain things because I was seeing things and looking at them about to hit me. So I start.
Is my Skype out again?
Basically,
no, it's on.
You're,
hello.
You're on.
You're good.
Hello.
Maybe not.
Oh, now she's gone.
No.
Oh, my goodness. But anyway, I have this thing about closing my eyes and just basically feeling the whip. And for some reason, I do better with my eyes closed than with my eyes open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I guess chime in with it with not by going by feel. There's a whip cracker in Australia named Ben Hughes. He's won the national championship over there multiple times, and I think recently he's been having some help putting some more videos online. So you can look up some of his videos, and he would tell me when he trained for a competition, he tried to train at night in the dark, so you go completely by feel, and also by the sound. It's always important to listen to the sound.
Yeah. Okay.
I dropped out, Lynn. What did I miss?
Oh, no, I was actually with saying something like some of the students require sight for them to see what the whip is doing. As for me, I tend to do better with my eyes closed.
Oh, yeah. 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 And so, okay, so that makes sense what Adam was saying then, the sound. That's pretty cool. Awesome. Now, a lot of our listeners that are listening who are just getting into whips, I'm sure really love cracking the whips and stuff, but not necessarily, you know, want to be a performer. Now, in your case, you're a very skilled performer and are in great demand all over the country and even overseas. I know you've been to Japan and a dozen other places. So what prompted you to want to become a performer as well as a practitioner?
I'm a middle child. I have to start there. So I was like to like performing, or like if I learned something, I'd be proud of it and want to show somebody. I think with the whip performing, I mean, I did a little bit, when I was in middle school, beginning of high school, like I did a few speeches in my high school speech class with the whip. But I want to say, well, I really started my performing career more in earnest when I was playing the harmonica. Like I was in high school and college, I was in several blues bands. And I really had a lot of ambition to perform with the harmonica. Not so much with the whips, it was just something I kept as a hobby. And it wasn't until I started making whips full-time in 2004 and I started practicing my whip cracking a lot more because I had the time that I started doing more demos to sell the whips. And I think once I did my first Renaissance Festival in 2006 as a performer, I started putting together a show, which it was really rough according to Renaissance Festival standards. But once I started doing that, I had a lot more fun doing it than I did with the whip making.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept up with the whip making for a couple of years, and I still make whips every now and then. But just because I had so much fun performing with the whips, and also I found it was more lucrative than just making whips, and definitely more lucrative than playing the harmonica. So it was between how it worked and how much fun I had, so I kept with it. And I can mention there was a whip cracker in Los Angeles named Brian Chick, who was he's on the DVD that Mark Allen sells, The Art of the Bullwhip. And Brian is similar to Jerry Deere in a way that both Brian and Jerry Deere play the piano. Mm-hmm. And Brian mentioned, or I think an anecdote of Brian's is that he was a keyboard player or piano player and also a whip cracker. But in L.A., he never got gigs as a piano player. He'd only get gigs as a whip cracker. So part of it has to do with performing with whips versus harmonicas, that there's so many harmonica players out there, but there aren't that many people out there really making a living performing with whips. So it makes it an easier venue to get into, especially if you have any desire to develop showmanship. I mean, and it also helps if you get lucky enough to find a venue like I have with the Renaissance Festival that's taken off. And another performer, Chris Camp, the whip guy, his main venues, I think, are state fairs, state fairs and libraries and a few other gigs here and there.
Very cool. Now, speaking of performing, Paul's here on the chat board, and apparently he's having problems with his voice IP. So he has a question for you that he wrote on the chat board. He wants to know what your favorite two-handed whip routine is, and do you tend to like more rhythmic routines or complex routines?
I would say one of my favorite routines right now it would be a routine that Ben Hughes created called the Launceston Special. I think there's a video of him. There's a couple of videos of him doing it online. I can't do it as well as Ben can. The main part of the routine is where you swing the whip around towards the front of you, like you do a flick, sidearm flick, swing the whip around, and you bring it to your neck, you let go of it with your hand, and then the whip travels around your neck, and you reach around and grab it. And there's a few more other complicated cracks along with it. That's a routine that I can stand in front of a mirror and just keep doing it over and over again. I really enjoy that one. Otherwise, another one of my favorite routines that I like going back to is Adam's Back. And I think if you watch the video I posted about the Australian National Whip Cracking Championships 2012, there's one really quick routine that I do in there and with a pair of short whips, and that's Adam's Back.
Cool. Awesome. And Paul also wants to know who your favorite whip cracker is and why.
Who my favorite whip cracker is? I'd say I really admire Ben Hughes as a whip cracker. I'd say he's one of my favorites. Mainly because Ben, it's interesting, he's not only did he go and take the time to learn almost pretty much every routine that was created, or that the Australian system of competitions has created, but he also created his new routines, and he really took the level of whip cracking to a higher level. I mean, there's other excellent whip crackers in Australia, like Luke Fritz and Daniel Wicks, who won the Men's Australian Championship last year. Though Ben's main thing is that he's learned, come up with all these other tricks, and also learned everyone else's tricks as well.
Wow. And for our listeners out there that haven't heard of Ben Hughes, look him up on YouTube, because he's amazing. I mean, both Adam and Ben are amazing. And, you know, I keep telling myself, oh, when I grow up a little more, I want to be just like them. But, yeah, it's Ben's routines are amazing. It's like it's like hypnotizing. I can like watch video all day of both of you, you know, and just go, oh, that's kind of neat.
I'd like awesome. To find out if you, Adam, have done any kind of routine done to music.
What I've tried to do, I went to India a few years ago, I think 2010, and I met an Israeli performer there, and he told me that if you really want to get notoriety for your whip cracking, you'll have to do something set to music. So I bought an iPod Nano, and I tried cracking whips to music, but I found it very difficult to try to get the whips, like the two-handed whip cracking, to really sync up with the song and not just either overwhelm the song or the visuals be overwhelming. I think there is a couple videos online of me cracking fire whips to Paranoid, a Black Sabbath Paranoid. Mm. The problem I found there is the fire whips are so heavy and ungainly. I tried matching the routines of the whips to the phrasing of the song, and I posted two videos, and then I spent another week working on the routine, and by the time I was done working on it, I was just sick of it. Never made the final video. But as far as what I did try to do, there's a couple of videos online. I did whips and drums, where I was trying to create a new piece of music with just the whips and another instrument. And the whips and drumming didn't quite take off. And then I posted a video last year, whips and harmonica, where I'm playing harmonica while cracking whips. And that sort of went semi-viral. It's like up to 400,000 views or something. So that's about as close as I've gotten to whips set to music.
I loved that video with the harmonica. I was like, oh, my gosh. I can't even sing and do whips. I can't imagine playing the harmonica. That's so awesome. Oh, my gosh. That's
I can't
cool.
even
now,
do gum and do it. No.
Yeah, you can.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can. Bob, do you have any questions for Adam?
No, I'm just listening and enjoying it.
Awesome. So, listeners, 347-677-0699. If you'd like to talk to Mr. Adam Winrich, bullwhip expert, please call in. I had another question. Oh, speaking of the Australian National Bullwhip Championships, was last year your first time at that event, or had you competed prior to that? And can you tell us a little bit about the championships and your experience there in Australia?
Yep. I've competed in Australia. What do I did compete in Australia three other times, 2007, 2008, and 2009, at a different competition held in Glen Innes, New South Wales. It was a much smaller competition. Last year was my first time at their national competition, which was held in Sydney at the Royal Easter Show. So I was their very first international competitor there. And I thought it was great. I mean, I got to meet a lot of great people. I got to see a lot of brilliant whip cracking in person. I took a heck of a lot of video, and then which I still watch on my computer every now and then, and learned a bunch of new routines. So, yeah, so I had a great time at the competition.
Awesome. Very cool. Now, for the whip enthusiasts that are listening that do want to get into competition, what would be your advice on what type of practice they should be doing?
First, I guess if you want to get in the Australian style of whip cracking, you'd want to get like a pair of 4.5-foot, 5-foot stock whips to start, preferably kangaroo hide. I know when I came to Seattle last year, and you guys saw me cracking stock whips, and I was like, I'm going to get a stock whip. The hard part is like not all stock whips are created equal, and sometimes now you could get a better, like from Paul, you could get a better performance hybrid whip for the same amount of money as you could trying to get like a 4-plat cowhide stock whip. But if you can get a pair of kangaroo hide stock whips are required, or, you know, well, that leather socklets, I guess, are required for the competitions in Australia if anyone goes there. So get the best pair of socklets you can, and then just start drilling the basics. Like I learned a lot of my initial two-handed whip cracking from watching Mike Murphy's DVD, Noble Whip Cracking. So a lot of stuff to drill. It's like you slow figure eights with two hands, work on all the timing variations there. The fast figure eights in your two hands, work on all those timing variations. There's about four or five different variations. Start drilling that stuff. And once you, because a lot of people pick up two whips, and I don't know if it's just the amount of time people have to practice, or it's maybe the determination, but it just comes down to drilling the basics, and then once your basics are solid, then you build on that foundation.
Awesome. Now, is it a normal thing, I guess, for people that get into double whip cracking to devise their own routines, like Ben Hughes has? I know you do, and many other people that do a lot of bullwhip cracking. Or is it more so that the Australians pretty much already have pretty much all of the double the double whip cracking routines, and we're just discovering them on accident?
Well, I think the hard part is, I guess, with some of the routines. It depends. I guess with two whips, I mean, there's always room for something else. I mean, like any object manipulation, like I think juggling, you can take a certain level of difficulty of a certain routine and then come up with a few different variations that maybe someone hasn't thought of. In Australia, I'd say with the routines that they have in competition, there are some that have become pretty standardized. Like if you want to compete at the top level, like the Philandi Hoof Beats, I think there's a video of me doing that on YouTube, or Ben's Helicopter. Those two have become standard. Also, the Four Corners in various combinations has become standard in Australian whip cracking. I think the hard part, it's if you approach whip cracking like a folk art, like I approach the harmonica first as a folk art. Kind of the thing with the harmonica, when I learned that, the blues practitioners would say, take a record, learn solos note for note, exactly how it was played originally by your favorite harmonica player, and then try to come up with something on your own. And I think that's important to apply that to whip cracking, is to look at videos like, say, Noble Whip Cracking. Learn what's on that DVD and learn it as well as you can. And then once you've learned something and drilled it, then try to come up with something on your own, rather than watching it, not learning any of it, and then coming up with something on your own. Because you want, if you wanted to have more depth to your whip cracking, it's better to learn as much as you can from other people and try to get it as close as you can to how they do it before you come up with something on your own. And that's really what Ben Hughes did, is he'd learn other people's routines, and then he'd come up with something on his own, and then he could really bump it up another notch for the difficulty of whatever he was, say if you take like Ben Hughes's Long Session Special, that's loosely based on the original routine that Fiona Wilkes did, called Wilkes' Wonder, and that's awesome. That's basically just doing a Queensland crossover, and at some point there you toss a whip around your neck and catch it. So Ben took that routine and added a lot more to it to create the Long Session Special. So it's that kind of thing, is learn everything you can, and then once you've done that, then try to come up with something new.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you for that advice. Now, you also make whips, correct? Now, where did you learn to make whips?
Let's see. Well, the first spot I learned to make whips from, I got, my dad had a copy of the Boy Scout Leatherworking Merit Badge book, so I learned how to braid four strands from that. So I threw together basically kind of a crude whip made out of lace that I cut myself with the scissors and just did the four-strand braid. And then I got another book called by Dennis Rush called Whips and Whip Making, which David Morgan said was loosely based on another book called How to Make Whips by Ron Edwards. But the nice thing about Dennis Rush's book is that it was very well illustrated. And the directions were easy to follow. I don't think it's in print anymore, but it was a small book, but easy to follow. And then I got a copy of David Morgan's book, Whips and Whip Making, and then Ron Edwards' book. And then also for me learning to make whips, so I got those books and learned as much as I can, like Dennis Rush's book and Ron Edwards' book, How to Make Whips. And then I spent time with a whip maker named Jim Hurlbut back in 2003. I think Paul Nolan also studied with Jim Hurlbut, because Jim was at that time was the only whip maker in the United States offering whip making classes. And then since then, I've spent time with Chris Barr He's considered the best stock whip maker or best whip maker pretty much in the world because he makes some very high quality collector's whips, of which I own a few. And then I've also spent time in David Morgan's shop talking to David and to the people now making the whips at their shop, Megan Baldwin and Alex Morgan.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Now, what would you feel, the whip maker, are the advantages and disadvantages between, like, let's say, leather whips and nylon whips? Because a lot of the people in my group, they're tending to gravitate toward nylon because it is a little more cost effective for many
right.
of our members here. But definitely they want leather. But what would you tell students of the whip, the advantages and disadvantages between leather and nylon?
I would say as far as how I've done shows or as routines I've done in my shows, I could do everything I could do with a leather whip that I could with a nylon whip. I think the hard part with leather versus nylon is it's cost effective. It's just that some people would think, oh, if I'm going to pay $500 for a kangaroo hide bull whip, it's going to be better than, should crack better than, say, the $200 I spend on a nylon bull whip. But that isn't always the case. A lot of it has to do with a specific whip maker, how well they know their trade, how much they know about whip cracking. Not every whip cracker or whip maker tests their whips the same or knows as much about whip cracking to know when they make it, like, oh, this doesn't crack as good as it should, I should change something. So I found that frustrating with nylon whip makers. So there's a lot of nylon whip makers popping up here and there, and some of them are or do try to learn a bit about whip cracking, but not all of them do. So that's a challenge. But I would say for anyone that just wants to learn to crack whips, yeah, I'd say you could do fine with nylon. I met an old-time performer in Florida who started making his own nylon whips back in the 60s, I think, and he had some quality kangaroo hide whips, but pretty much all his shows he was using nylon whips that he made himself. So I'd say pretty much any trick worth doing in a show, almost all of them you can do with a nylon whip, except for a few tricks I do in my show, like cutting a can in half. I'll use a chainmail whip for that, or body wraps. If you're going to do a lot of wraps on skin on someone, I found nylon's a bit abrasive. So in that instance, you'd be better off with a leather whip just because the leather's similar.
Awesome. Now, Lauren Wickline says hello. She just logged into the chat board. And Paul has another question. He wants to know if you feel do you think it's important for a whip maker to be a competent whip cracker in order to be a good whip maker?
I would say so, just because if you make a whip and you don't crack it and you're not sure how it's supposed to respond, then you're going to make it, sell it to someone, and you won't get any better as a whip maker. Like, you just sell somebody to something that's a whip. The guy that I mentioned before that made his own nylon whip, the performer in Florida, his name was Gordy Peer. And Gordy liked to break down whip makers as there are whip makers and there are string pullers. So a string puller would be the idea of someone who makes a whip, braids it up, but doesn't crack it, knows that it's supposed to taper, but maybe doesn't know how to fine-tune it, and so he'd be a string puller. Or a whip maker where maybe it's braided, maybe not everything's perfect, but the whip does roll out and does perform all the routines easier than, say, the whip made by the string puller. So I would think, I guess one problem I've seen when I went over to Europe is that there were a couple whip makers that were popular, bull whip makers that are still selling whips, and they were a lot of women over there. It's either in Europe and in New York, big cities, burlesque whip cracking is becoming very popular, even among circus performers. They burlesque performers want to pick up a third or fourth skill, and they think, oh, whip is the thing, or same with circus performers. And because of the spaces that they work, small stages, a lot of them, they'll buy a four-foot bull whip. And I think the biggest challenge I found is they'll say, oh, I want a four-foot bull whip, but the people that they're buying them from don't usually use four-foot bull whips, so they don't know, like, how good a four-foot bull whip can perform. So I felt like these burlesque performers, what they're buying maybe is a little bit substandard. And then if the people making them were better whip crackers and knew more about how four-foot bull whip could perform, those performers buying them would get a better whip. So, long story short, yeah, it's definitely a whip maker should be a whip cracker. I'm always leery of if I get a new whip and I'm from a whip maker and I see that they didn't crack it, like, you should have cracked it, because how do you know if you could have found something to make it better if you didn't crack it before you sent it out?
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
I'm just kind of curious. Adam, in your travels, are there more men doing bullwhip, or are there pretty much a lot of women also getting into bullwhip?
Well, a lot of women getting into it. I think when I went to England last year, it seemed about half women. I think a lot of them getting into the burlesque performing. When I went to Japan, Reina Hayashi said that she sells 90% of her whips to women. And so definitely,
wow.
I think at least half of the people in the workshop were women, maybe more. I know there's a photo online. You could count how many were women.
Mm-hmm.
But, so definitely more women. And that's one of the things I think is harder. There aren't that many women whip makers out there. So part of me felt there's a place like Lauren Wickline is sort of filling it, and so is Reina Hayashi, where a female whip maker, at least because, I mean, women are, like, smaller than guys, may have smaller hands. Is that if you had a whip maker responding to women's needs for what they want in a whip, that's a spot in the market that could be filled by somebody that could be responding to those, you know, what a woman would want in a whip.
I'm going
to
close for you, Adam. This topic just came up. Do you find it easier from a man to a woman's perspective that a woman learns how to crack a whip easier because they're not trying to muscle through it, they're not trying to bring it back really fast and do this, to play out the typical macho male role?
Well, do women learn to crack whips faster than men? Sometimes.
Yes.
I think it depends what kind of guy it is. Some guys do pick up a whip and are being more macho right away. I guess it's been a while since I think in the workshops I've been to, usually those guys that are shown up and do want to get decent with the whip have already whacked themselves a couple times and know to respect the whip more. I guess I don't have a real definite answer. I want to say 60-40. Most of the time, yeah, a woman will learn to crack a whip faster. But there's a lot of sensitive guys out there nowadays, so those guys need to learn the whip equally well.
I'm just not one of them.
I was about to say, Bob.
I'm sorry to say this because I'm a guy, but last year when you were teaching us whip in 29 Palms, guys not they don't have the respect for the tool or for the weapon or for the whip that the women do, because remember what that one guy did? He thought it was funny and whipped me in the butt with the whip.
Right.
Just his little hand gesture, and it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
No woman would have done that.
Right, right. I'm sorry I missed that, because I would have nipped that in the bud, really quick. I would say the same as Adam, is that maybe it's about 60-40. And that there are, you know, sensitive guys out there, and, you know, for the most part, being a woman and a martial artist, you know, when it comes to martial arts, and I look at whip as being like an art, not just, oh, I'm going to crack a whip, right? You know, just like all of the whip enthusiasts out there, as well as the whip makers, it's an art. And, you know, being a woman, I can't muscle anything. It has to be all about, you know, technique and listening to the instructors. And, you know, if the instructor says, oh, nope, you're not bringing it back far enough, you know, to take that into consideration, you know. And I'm not saying this because I think, you know, guys don't listen to correction. It's, I guess it just, like Adam says, that it depends on the guy. So.
Right, right.
Yeah, awesome. Let's see. I'm checking the chat board here just one of our chat board members just said, ouch, that hurts to hit yourself with a whip or anything else. All right. I think we've got just a couple more questions for you, Adam, and then we'll let you go because I know you've had a long day. Now, you've got a mountain of other skills. You know, most of us know you for your whip cracking skills, but you're also a skilled harmonica player, which you were talking about earlier. But if I remember correctly, you're a knife thrower and a trick roper. Now, what got you into those activities, and are there any other skills that I missed?
let's see. Well, knife throwing, I started out as a kid. My dad he got interested in fur trade reenactments, like rendezvous reenactments of the Mountain Man era, like 1800 to 1840. So we'd go to reenactments when I was like in middle school and high school. So they have tomahawk and knife throwing competitions there. So I remember one day my dad brought home a couple tomahawks and set up a block, and we started throwing them. So that's kind of how I got into knife and tomahawk throwing as a kid. And then I was like the impalement arts, like the thrill of throwing around somebody. So I've been messing around with that for a while. And then I've also had knives thrown around me before, so I know it's scary to stand there and have a hunk of metal like plunk into a board when you're standing right there next to it. Right. So yeah, so knife throwing, yeah, I got into that as a kid. Lasso spinning, I didn't really try until I started getting involved with the Wild West Arts Club, which was a Wild West Performance Arts Club that they sponsored whip cracking, knife throwing, gun spinning, and lasso spinning. So only when I started hanging out with that kind of crowd did they start trying to show me lasso spinning. And then I didn't really, and I tried to learn a few tricks here and there and make it part of my show. Like some shows you can't always do, like my regular show, I'll do fire whip cracking and regular whip cracking. So there's a bit of a dynamic there, but if you can't do the fire whip, sometimes it's nice to have some lassos added to the show just to have that dynamic of here's something that is slowing but doesn't make a sound, and then here's the whips that are exciting and do make a sound. And I got better at the lasso spinning the last couple years after I started competing at the replacement club for the Wild West Arts Club is the Wild West Performance Arts Society, and they've had some world championships for Western performing. So they do they have competitions for whip cracking, lasso spinning, knife throwing, and gun spinning. So the last time I competed in, what was it, 2013? 2000, well, I competed in 2010, 2011, and they have a new competition coming up in about a month. So for the 2011 competition, I bought myself, not only did I do the whips, the lasso spinning, and knife throwing, I also bought holsters and a set of pistols. I started learning some basic gun spinning and put together a routine for that.
And those are beautiful pistols, by the way, your Colts. I just saw the picture of it a couple days ago, and I was like, oh, my God. those are beautiful. So, yeah.
The other thing I didn't actually post a picture of the ones I use. The ones I use are stainless steel, like bright and shiny for the gun spinning. I think the one I posted, like I'm interested in all sorts of. I have a knife collection. I have an antique gun collection. I have a whip collection that's pretty substantial.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Awesome. Awesome.
Well,
yeah,
let me ask you something then, Adam.
Pardon?
Since you've got all these skills for showmanship and you perform a lot, do you have a set routine, or do you perform to the crowd what they want? Do you pick and choose, or is it more like a musical set where you know you're going to play certain songs in a row?
Oh, with a certain routine. Yeah. Kind of what happens is the main thing, I work four different festivals a year is my main bulk of my main work. So like this year I'm in Arizona right now, and I'll be in Georgia, I'll be in Wisconsin doing the Brisbane Renaissance Fair, and then Texas. So each performance area kind of requires me to do a different show depending on the stage. But pretty much once I get there, I'll start fine tuning the show to the general audience that's there, and then pretty much I'll get set to like each time you come to see me during the course of that festival, it'll pretty much be the same show. And then I'll start writing new material as I need to. Like, I try to write new material each year, and then I might vary the show depending on which festival I'm at, depending on the staging. But pretty much once I got my show set for that year, I'll keep polishing it, but I won't drastically change things. Just because sometimes it's difficult, you're working a crowd, and to keep the whole crowd moving along with the show, sometimes you need to keep it tight and know where your jokes are. And only at the festivals, like if it's a rain day and a really small crowd, well, I start getting fast and loose and be like, I'm going to do this trick, and I'll do this trick. But most of the time, yeah, it's a set show that I do where I know what I'm going to do and all the jokes.
Do you have to vary your show much when it comes to the stage, or are most of the stage you perform on pretty substantial and about the same size?
No, well, I'd say, no, they're all kind of different performing situations. Like where I'm at now, the stage is like 20 feet wide, 100 feet long. It's in their old joust arena that they have at this festival. So it's a very long, open space, grassy space. I'm kind of raised up about 2 feet off the ground on this middle patch that's 20 feet by 100 feet. People are all around me. So in this space, I was able to put together a two-handed whip routine with two 22-foot whips. That's on my first DVD that's for sale on my website. And also this space, a regular part of my show is using a 22-foot whip to cut flowers out of an assistant's hands and mouth. So this is about the only place where I can make that a regular part of my show. All the other places that I perform at generally are too small to use that long of a whip. So then I'll change it up and do other routines, like either cracking two whips around a volunteer or popping a balloon out of someone's crotch with a whip.
Oh,
that would not be me.
Oh man, I've seen this trick on one of his videos, and I love how you do it. I'm not gonna, I love how you just extend it all out, and the poor guy is sitting there going, "Oh my god,
right?
What's gonna happen?" It is, it's a great trick.
Yeah. Well, that's a real trick to any variety humor, especially working crowds like what I'm doing now, like live entertainment, where I'm just talking a lot, is to take one trick and try to make it into a routine with a lot of comedy and build up, try to make it at least 5 minutes long. That's one avenue of performing I haven't tried is like circus, where you take like everything I do in my 20-minute show and try to set it just to music and make it 5 minutes long. But hopefully this summer I'll get some more experience performing in a circus tent.
You know, I think it would be really cool to see you cracking a whip and doing a Texas skip with a lasso at the same time. I think that would be awesome.
That would
I don't know.
Awesome.
Well, I've heard of people being able to do a wedding ring and cracking a whip at the same time. I mean, obviously I've just done a flat loop and cracked a whip at the same time. The wedding ring, I've heard of that. I haven't done it. It's a bit hard.
Uh-huh.
You have to keep the wedding ring really high and the whip really low. Texas
yeah.
skip, I'm not sure, just because the
yeah,
most
yeah,
I think people can do a butterfly while doing the Texas skip, but the hard part is that the lasso, it's like the ring that passes
right.
through the levitating girl or over the levitating girl. Like it goes the whole way past you, so it'd be hard to do it to not tangle.
I'm pretty sure you'd be able to figure it out. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you'd be able to figure it out. I just started with the lasso not too long ago. Amanda here is part of our group here in Seattle. Got me hooked on it. I tried it as a kid and it didn't work out. And kind of like the bullwhip. I tried it as a kid, didn't work out. Got back into it and I suck at it. But like anything, practice makes perfect, right?
Yep. I think that's the hard part with the lasso. It's generally considered the lasso is harder to learn to pick up than the bullwhip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was having trouble just with the horizontal loop, mainly because I wasn't rotating the rope very much. I would just get it all tangled up and stuff, and I'd be like, but
yep.
It's getting better. But before we let you go, because we're going at 90 minutes and we don't want to keep you too long, Paul has one last question. He wants to know what your favorite experience was that resulted from performing with the whips. If you have any
favorite experience from performing
with
whips.
Or memorable. Why don't we just say most memorable?
Memorable. I guess I'd say a couple experiences are most memorable. I think in 2010, when I competed at the Wild West Performance Art Society competition, not only did I win their whip cracking award, and I also won their award for knife throwing. I won the award for best all around performer. So that was really satisfying to win that award. And then probably the only thing next to that was going to the Australian National Championships to compete there. If for no other reasons than that I got to perform in the same venue that they recorded Mike Murphy's DVD back in 1999, the dueling whips. So we were in the same venue. So that was really cool to have taken the thing that really inspired me to learn two-handed whip cracking and get to compete at that competition in the same venue.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
So probably those two.
Very cool. Awesome. Well, wow. Looks like we're done with our interview. However, for the listeners, we're going to be on for another 35 minutes after Mr. Winrich leaves us tonight. Mr. Winrich has had a long day at the Ren Fair, so we don't want to keep him too long. But we're still going to be on online on the air. So we've got a bunch of people on the chat board, and I'm just going to send a shout out to all of them. We've got Paul Nolan. That's on the chat board. Hi, Paul. Lauren Wickline, another very skilled whip maker. And we've got my friend from karate, Deb Evans. Hi, Deb. And Daniel Borton. Thanks for listening, Daniel.
Dan didn't ask any questions?
No. So, Dan, do you have any questions? Well, Paul says
Wait a few minutes until he types something up.
Yeah, exactly. But my it's funny. My friend Deb goes, what's a Ren Faire?
Oh, do you want me to explain that quickly?
Yeah, let's explain that really quick.
As best as I can explain it, I know there isn't, if you're in Seattle, there isn't one. I think there's a small one in the Northwest, and I think they're trying to put, I think there's going to be one in Oregon, outside of Portland coming up. A Renaissance festival. The idea is it's an outdoor, open-air festival on a permanent site. They generally run, some of them run like 4 weekends in a row, some of them run 8 weekends in a row. They're all around the country. The idea is it's a Renaissance-themed festival, so everything's built sort of like a version of perhaps Elizabethan England. Some of the festivals are Elizabethan oriented. So you're looking at 1600, somewhere in there, Shakespeare's era. Some festivals are very Shakespearean, and you can go watch like short versions of Shakespearean plays or see someone portray William Shakespeare. A lot of it comes down, you got knights in armor, you got wenches, you got people as princesses, you got variety shows, you have a lot of artisans that have built booths around where you can buy handcrafted goods. They got glass blowing. You can see lots of leather workers. You can buy swords, wooden swords and shields are popular with kids. You come out, drink beer, eat a turkey leg, see lots of women wearing corsets with their boots pushed up pretty high. You can watch jousters or knights in shining armor ride horses and joust and knock each other off their horses and then whack each other with a metal sword. Sometimes the jousting troop out here does a little routine with a flaming whip and a flaming sword. So you can see those guys put on a fight several times a day. And then, or you can come and watch someone like me, a variety entertainer who's spent years perfecting their skill, and or other variety entertainers that are just based in comedy. So it's a combination of, families can come out, you can watch some live entertainment, do some shopping, do some eating, and have a general good time.
Awesome. Yeah, I love fairs. I think for me the first part is getting in garb. And going to the Ren Faire. So Deb on the chat board, just so you know, the Ren Faire, if I remember correctly, used to be around in your neck of the woods, well, on the other side of the water over there, near Port Orchard, I think. But now it's closer to Puyallup. So not too far from you, Deb. So if you ever want to check out a Ren Faire, hit me up and we'll go to the Ren Faire. So, yeah. So, anyhow, wow, that was a great interview. Thank you so much, Adam, for joining us and taking the time out of your busy day to join us today.
Yep, no problem.
Awesome.
I'm hoping he's going to be visiting Seattle again. I missed the last one.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, we'll see how it goes. I know this year, I traveled a lot last year. I think last year I was in, I went to France, Holland, and then to Australia, and then I went to Holland again, Sweden, England, Japan, and in December I went to China.
Wow.
And then aside from being in Seattle, so there's a lot of traveling. I think this year I was about ready to start slowing down, and so far my main travel plans are to go to England for an open-air festival, and I was hoping I could take September off so I could actually have some time off to relax and maybe work up a new routine.
Awesome. Yay.
Oh, wow.
Cool. Well, hopefully, one of these days. Well, we'll see about getting up here. One of these days. Awesome. Well, that was Adam Winrich. Thank you again, Adam. And we'll go ahead and let you go so you can get some rest, some very deserved rest.
Well-deserved rest. Absolutely.
Yeah. And congratulations on the Guinness Book of World Records. So we'll talk to you later, Adam.
Yep.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Adam.
All
Bye.
Right, so that was Adam Winrich, and we had a nice interview with him. We're going to be on for another 30 minutes talking whips. So if anybody out there wants to call in and just talk whips, call in, 347-677-0699. We've got a bunch of people on the chat board. Wow, this is the most people I've seen in a while. What do you think, Lynn? How many people are you counting now? Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
7.
Not including
us.
Oh. Yeah, I was just counting me. I don't know why.
You're right, Bob. I don't think she can count.
I was just I was counting lines, not what they said.
Yeah, I counted lines.
Wow, so
that was
a really cool interview. What'd you think, Bob? Learn a little
that
bit about
Whip? That was great. The guy had a wealth of knowledge. Adam was amazing. I really enjoyed it.
She just dropped out, Bob. She just dropped
what?
Out again.
Are you serious?
Yeah, she'll be back. I get this notification going, oh, there's no lead. You want to be the lead? Oh, you want to host?
I can host for a minute. A couple people have accused me. Oh, what's wrong with you?
Darn Skype. I don't know how long I was talking before all of a sudden it goes bloop. You know, it makes that weird Skype noise when you get disconnected.
No, I think you finished your sentence and then Bob started answering you and then that's when you dropped out.
Yeah, it was weird. And I don't get a, you know, heads up. It just da-da-da-da-da and all of a sudden bloop, you know, and then I got to call back in. And then the little recorded voice says, Since it appears that you are calling into a live show, we are reconnecting you now. What the heck?
Hey, I got a question for you, Sifu.
Sure.
Who won the fight with Ronda Rousey last night? I didn't see it.
I didn't see it either, and I haven't looked.
I'm looking right now, and I can't find it, but the reason I asked was I just emailed her to see if she'd do our show next week.
Who? I'm sorry.
Ronda Rousey, female fighter at the UFC.
Oh, you know, that would be cool if we could get her.
Last time she didn't answer me, but we'll see.
We'll see. I mean, but, you know, I'm just, you know how busy they are. It's like crazy.
Oh, I know.
Busy, right? It's like,
yeah.
So, yeah, listeners, 347-677-0699. We got another 30 minutes that we want to take. We're just going to talk some whips here. Now, speaking of whips, Lynn. Okay.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to tell the listeners the story here. So, anyhow, there is a gentleman that is hiring a circus group that comes from here in Seattle, the Seattle School of Acrobatics and New Circus Arts. There's a gentleman that's hiring a group, this whole group, to do a performance for family members.
Okay.
So pretty cool. But I need to talk to you off the air, Lynn, about that. Just so you know. It's all good.
Is it that same group that we actually
I need to talk to you after case because
okay.
This is okay. we're on public air right now. So
got it.
Yeah, so I'll talk to you after we air. So anyhow.
Yeah.
So that's speaking of that. So with that said, Bob, do you have any questions about whips in general that hopefully me or Lynn or some of our experts on the chat board can answer for you or anybody else? If anybody else wants to call in, if you know nothing about whips and you want to know about bull whips.
Oh, wait. Deborah was actually saying something about the only whips that she knows are the ones she used for horses.
Oh, the lunge whip. Yeah. Those are long, thin, long-handled whips. And a lot of times, I guess the best way to, it's hard for me to explain, the best way to explain a lunge whip is, you know, like if you go to the circus and you see the trainer or the circus performer with lions or tigers or whatever, they've got this long wand-looking thing that has what looks like a piece of string on the end. And some may crack, some may not. I do remember that the great Gunther Gable Williams, a tiger and cat trainer in the Barnum & Bailey, Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey Circus back in the 70s, he used a version of the lunge whip. There's a different name for it, but it's a very long, thin-handled whip. Some of the handles can be upwards of anywhere between 3 to 5 feet long. And the... And the whip itself, the thong is very thin and can be anywhere between 3 feet to maybe about 4 feet or 6 feet, I don't remember, but they're not as long as the handle or the rod itself. Usually they're used for touching stock. You're not supposed to really crack it, but primarily they're supposed to be used for touching the stock and guiding them and stuff like that. If I remember correctly, Gunther Gable Williams, his lunge whips used to crack, and they used to have a really sharp, sharp crack that reverberated through the whole arena. And those can be hard to crack because of the long rod. So yeah, okay. The lunge whip. In the Philippines, though, we call similar whips Kalisa whip. You can have a very long handle on a Kalisa whip, depending. And just kind of like the jeepneys over there in the Philippines, many times the Kalisa drivers will make their own whips. So they can be very beautiful handled things. It's incredible. But I guess here in the West, they would be called carriage whips. So probably not as long as a lunge whip, a little shorter. So that way they just need to be long to reach from the front seat of the coach to the horses, which isn't very far, right? So those are a little bit easier to crack. And apparently, if I remember correctly or if I heard correctly, and our expert at the chat board can correct me if I'm wrong, that the coachman's crack derived from that so that way it wasn't cracking above the horses or on the horses, that it would crack near the coachman
behind
itself.
Yeah.
Lunge whip.
Well, then let me ask you,
whatever you want to call it.
The different whip is that?
I think we're losing her again.
Are we losing her? Did we lose her? Is she gone?
No, she's still on. Are you still there? Oh, okay.
I'm here.
All right.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah. The different whips, are they called the different whips because of the way they're made, or does the link play a part of the bullwhip's name, or just the way it's made and how it's made?
I'm guessing the way it's made. Now, I'm a very, very new whip maker. In fact, we've got whip makers on the board right now that have tons more experience. But the length of a bullwhip, quote unquote, really doesn't have anything to do with it being named a bullwhip. If I remember correctly, it's the style that it's made in.
Okay, that made sense because Adam had made a reference to a 4-foot bullwhip, and I always imagined a bullwhip was much longer than that. So I'm assuming it's the way it's made and how it's put together.
Yeah. I would have to, in fact, I'm going to ask Lauren and Paul right now, what exactly determines what a bullwhip is, and maybe they can type it in or call. I know they're busy right now. I know Lauren is tying knots in another room, and that you need both hands for that.
Yes.
But I've seen like mini bullwhip, baby bulls, that are upwards of like only 2 feet. I've seen like bullwhip, like jewelry, literally, that you can wear them as like necklaces or bracelets or even earrings that are like really tiny, like a foot, or maybe even 6 inches, and they crack.
Oh, wow.
I know, right? It's great. Oh, Paul says a bullwhip itself is a whip with a rigid handle that is continuous to the thong. Cool. Thank you, Paul, because
cool.
I'm like, how do I explain that? You might see bullwhips, though, Bob, that, that might look different, right? I guess a common cosmetic thing would be the transition knot. Some bullwhips, they'll have a transition knot, and that's the cute little knot that is at the end of the handle but at the start of the thong. Or you might see a bullwhip without one, or you might see a bullwhip with like two transition knots and a metal collar. But regardless of the aesthetics, what Paul said is that a bullwhip is a whip with a rigid handle that is continuous into the thong. Now, in relation to a stock whip, where the thong is completely a separate entity from the handle, right? That's where the difference is. You can actually change out your thongs on a stock whip.
I gotta ask this because thong to a guy has a different meaning. What is a thong on a whip?
It's the actual braided part of the whip, other than the handle, before you get to the fall. Looks like we have a caller, but I think Lynn is in the screening room with them. And Lauren chimed in. The thong, quote unquote, is the braided portion of the whip, the braided flexible portion. And a lot of people tend to call that part the quote unquote lash, or some people call it the tail. Oh, and Paul just got on. Thong is basically the flexible lash. Okay, cool. So I'm saying it all right. Okay, that's pretty cool.
Cool.
So and Deborah was thinking the same thing as you too. Thong, really? Definitely don't want this thong on your butt. Let's. Oh my gosh! Hey, Lynn, are you back? Do we have a caller? Lynn, you still there? Bob, you still there?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay.
She must still be in the screening room.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I guess no, she's back now. I guess somebody's just listening to the live feed on their phone, so that's cool. I was going to say something else about
Sorry, I forgot to unmute myself.
Oh, Paul says it's him.
That's probably why they couldn't hear me.
Okay. Paul, are you there?
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Awesome. I just saw your message on the chat board. Cool. Well, thanks for joining us live again.
Yeah, no problem. Does it sound a little better this time, or...
Yeah, you sound a little better. You don't sound as far away. You just sound faint.
Okay, good. I'll try to talk louder then.
Okay. Well, we are here with Paul Nolan, a whip maker, and we've got another about 20 minutes to talk whips. So if any listeners out there that want to know more about whips, give us a call, 347-677-0699. And I'm sure Paul can answer any more whip questions if Bob has any more about construction or anything
now,
like that.
I do want to bring something else up, though. This is we're talking artistry here. There is no sexual connotation. Because so many times, Sifu, you brought up the fact you do whips and everybody gives a glared look in their eyes. Oh, really?
You
know what I mean?
Yeah. Right. And I'll have to like chime in with that one, because every time I say I do whips, you know, I get the elbow poke and the, oh really, you do whips, huh? And I'll say first and foremost that no, I don't go there.
Right.
And two, it is for me, and I can't speak for Lynn, and Lynn I'm sure can chime in on this in a little bit here. For me, it. The reason why I got into whips, and this is going to be answering Lauren's question too, because she wanted to know how I got interested in the whip, was the challenge of it. You know, as a martial artist, I found that any type of weaponry or tool or what have you, not only are they cool, but they are instruments that really help you gain a sense of not only self-awareness, but like peripheral awareness. You have to know where that weapon is going. Like, for example, when I learned how to do rope dart, another flexible weapon, which is basically a sharp metal heavy dart on the end of a long rope, and learning how to wrap it around the body, wrap it around elbows and feet, and learning to shoot from these really intricate, you know, positions, right? My teacher used to say, don't be afraid of the weapon or it will bite you. It's when you try too hard to avoid the weapon, when it will hit you in the eye or take a tooth out or something, right? And she was true. That was true. If every time I would try to move to not let the dart hit me, it would affect the rest of the dart. So at the time, flexible weapons were my big thing. This was like back in the 1990s. I was really into flexible weapons, the chain whip and the rope dart. And I saw a video of a Shaolin monk doing the bullwhip. And I thought, no way, really? It's not just for cowboys anymore. And I went, oh, my gosh, I want to learn that, you know, because, you know, not only was it a tool that I would have to challenge my awareness on and my body with and my coordination with, but it makes noise. How cool is that? So I took a seminar in the Shaolin bullwhip up in Baltimore and fell in love with it. And at the time, the whips were, and you'll love this, Bob, at the time, we called them woodies.
Really?
Yeah, we called them woodies.
How do you explain that when you tell somebody you're going to whip your woody?
I know, right? Whip the woody with the song, yeah, you know.
wood handled trigger.
Yeah, and they were just wood handled, and the song, like, you know, was built into the handle. I don't know how they do it. And it would have red horse hair in place of a transition knot. And so it was very Chinese. With the same red horse hair that you would find on a Chinese spear, that mm-hmm. you know, that was on there, and I thought, well, that's pretty cool, and I bought one, and you know, looking back now, after handling a lot of great whips and starting to make them, I was like, wow, this whip, the Chinese whip was actually made pretty well, as far as tape. Granted, it was only like 10 plat, but. It was made pretty well, but I ran that thing into the dirt trying to practice the overhead crack and the cattleman's crack. Just ran it into the dirt, and one day it just boop, fell apart, and I was like just so heartbroken. And I took about, I don't know, maybe about 4 years, 4 or 5 years away from the whip. And then I just started buying, you know, cheapo whips at Renaissance fairs and stuff, and a little disappointed that they didn't crack because they were cheap. They were, you know, they were souvenirs, you know, meant for display
right.
only. But only, like, how many years ago, Lynn, did we start the group? Was it about 3 years ago?
Was it three? Maybe two, as far as if I can remember.
I think this will be our third year, this year, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But I didn't really start getting serious again about the whip until about 8 months before I started the group. So almost 4 years ago, I got serious about it again and really started studying and practicing every day and getting my licks in, you know, and hitting myself and, you know, learning through trial and error. And, yeah, and that's how I...
Well, you know, I find it real interesting because I've cracked little ones, four-footers, and mm-hmm. I know how hard it was to learn to do that, but Adam was talking about cracking a 22-foot whip.
Right. Right.
I couldn't even picture doing that.
It's you can't really pick it up and throw it behind you like you know, we would think. Paul's connection went out, so Paul's going to answer us through chat. Oh, that's too bad. Oh, there he goes. Now the call's really dropped. But, okay. So you can't really throw it behind you. You kind of have to, like, give it a big flick. So you lift up the handle, and then you kind of have to throw it from there as if we were doing a trick that we call the front flick. So it, basically what you're doing is you're, like, sending, like, a sine wave down the whip. And it's pretty cool because the sine wave itself, you know, starts really big, you know, near the handle, you know, because, you know, you're the one lifting it up. But then it goes, like, really, really small. The wave sine goes really, really small. And then once it, like, cracks on the end, it comes out like a cannon. And then the whole whip opens up into this, like, you know, big crack. It's amazing. And it's crazy. So yeah, I can't imagine making a 22-foot whip.
No, it's incredible. I was at a house one time and somebody was practicing outside. They were practicing whipping. Now this was in L.A. and the owner of the house had to come out and say stop that because it sounded like a gunshot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for real.
And in L.A. it could have been.
Yeah, it could have been. It could have been. Doc! Now, I got a
Bob,
question.
Bob, they were using a 22-footer?
No, he was using a small one.
Oh, okay. I was thinking 22 feet. I know in California, most houses are, like, right next to each other. I guess that depends on where in California, but, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. When we were in 29 Palms, they're not quite that close together, are they?
Right. Yeah. No. It's like a whole lot of nothing.
Right.
A whole lot of desert.
Okay.
Whole lot of desert. But it's pretty though. I want to go back there. But yeah, you know, the 22-foot whip. And Paul just said this. The 22-foot whip takes forever to make, Paul, or to crack. Because I'm gonna say it takes forever to crack. Because the last video that I saw. I forgot if it was Adam or someone else that was cracking like a 22-foot whip, but they actually did the initial like downstroke, and it was like 1,001, 1,002, 1,003, crack. It was like,
I know. It seems like I could go out and get a cup of coffee by the time that thing reached its full potential.
Yeah, and that's what Daniel Borton on the chat board just said. Daniel goes,
I love it.
Yeah, you can get
I
it rolling out.
Answer.
I know, you can get it rolling out, go get coffee, and then come back in time to hear it crack.
Right.
That's right.
My problem is being 5 feet tall. How the heck do you wield a 22-footer?
You got to jump. Though, I mean, you still have your upswing. So your upswing is going to give you a lot of height initially. It's the downstroke. It's the force of the downstroke that's going to determine whether or not that sine wave, so to speak, will travel all the way through 22 feet or 40 feet. So you really got to, like,
well,
harp
the thing
on
is
the downstroke.
That I'm thinking, how do you break it in?
That's a good question. I don't know. Roll it up and, you know, put it on a trailer hitch and have someone drive it out to its full length and do it again. I don't know.
Dang.
Deborah goes, who's 5 feet? Well, Lynn is, and so am I. I'm only like 5 foot one, which is why I prefer 4 foot whips, which are technically like 6 feet after the fall and the cracker. But I do like longer whips. You know, I do like cracking 8 and 10 foot whips. I haven't cracked a 12 foot whip. Wait, maybe I did. Didn't Sean in our group bring a 12 footer, or was that just a 10 footer?
I think that was only a 10.
Yeah, I think it was only a 10. I haven't cracked that, so that means I haven't cracked a 12 footer yet. So yeah. Oh.
Well, you remember the night I met you, Seafood, a year and a half ago, that somebody asked. This is when we started clicking, because somebody asked you to stand up. You stood up, and I said, wait a minute. They told you to stand up. Oh, wait a minute. You are.
I remember that. Yeah, and I forgot what I said back.
You hit me.
That's right. Oh, Paul on the chat board says that the overlay strands of a 22-foot whip are cut to about 35 feet.
Wow.
And then,
wow.
Well, you have to, because when you braid, they have to shrink, right? Because, like,
right.
Yeah, I've got all my notes somewhere else on my tablet, but the last time I made a 4 foot nylon for a student, I think I cut the overlay strands at 12 feet or something. I forget. But, and you know, the first time I made a 4 foot whip, I'm like, there is no way I'm going to use all this strand. There's no way, because I had strands, you know, going out of the office, you know, and then
right.
I finally figured out, okay, that's right, I can do the whip maker's bundle. I don't have to, like, you know, have them all over this floor. My office chair was running all over them and stuff, and I'm like, there's no way I'm going to use all this, and I did. And I was like, whoa, that's a trip. So, yeah. Oh, yeah, Paul goes, should be at least 6 feet for a 4 foot. Yeah, yeah, but I doubled them. I doubled them at the loop. I took a 12-foot one and I put them in half. So anyhow, yeah. So, and Paul says the rule of thumb is about 1.5 times the finish length plus a foot or so for room to grab the strands, especially like if you're near the end. My first whip, I cut without any leeway, and that was a pain in the ass.
What did it end up being, like a foot?
Well, no, I mean, it was like I had to like cut it not cut it short, but it was more like a 3'5" or something like that whip, as opposed to a 4-foot whip that I initially was going for. And I was like, ah, screw it. So it's a little 3.5 thing. Yeah, I do. And Paul goes, oh, yeah, sorry, I was thinking leather. You can always cut it shorter, but you can't add any length. So, yeah, with leather, each of the strands themselves have to be, for at least for a 4-foot, about 6 feet, so about 1.5 longer than the finished product. But with paracord, what we tend to do with paracord is we tend to take double the length we need, and then we just plait starting from the middle of it. We'll double it from there, mainly just because it's easier and it's paracord. With leather, though, and I one of these days I do want to work with leather, but I do need to practice a lot more just with the paracord whips. I'm still trying to fine-tune my taper. And they still taper and they still crack pretty well, but, you know, I just want them to look better. So I want to practice a lot more on that. And eventually I want to try getting into leather. Leather right now scares me. Because I figure, you know, if I mess up with paracord, you know, I can just, like, take some more off the roll. And not waste a bunch of leather. So, yeah.
Yeah, because what's the difference in price? Like, at least double, right? Between leather and paracord, or more?
I don't know what the price difference is. I mean, I know it's more expensive. Paul would know more about that.
Basically the prepping of the leather is more difficult than the braiding.
Yeah, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Just cutting it and doing all that to it, sure.
Yeah, just from what I've seen. And stuff like that, and books and videos and stuff like that. It's like, oh, it scares me. Well, oh, my goodness, we have like 3 minutes left.
Well, can we do a couple more shout-outs then real quick, Sifu?
Yeah, let's do a couple shout-outs.
Okay, I want to put a shout-out to the Martial Arts History Museum. We're going to get it's a great nonprofit organization, first one of its kind anywhere that I know of. We're going to soon get a commercial doing their advertisement for their up and coming events and that sort of thing. And you know what? We have 2 weeks left before the closing of the nominations for the Masters Hall of Fame 2013 to be held June 22nd, 2013 in Costa Mesa, California. And we got to get our nominations in and closed.
Yeah. Yeah. So if, Any of you martial artists out there have any suggestions for anyone that you'd like to see be inducted into the Masters Hall of Fame, let Sifu, Robert, and I know ASAP. You can reach us on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, or you can find us on Facebook. Just look up our names, Restita de Jesus and Robert Deal, D-E-A-H-L, and send us a Facebook message. Because I don't think you guys can friend us anymore. We have too many friends. It's like,
right, right.
It sucks that there's a cap on the Facebook friend thing. But send us a Facebook email with the name and any other information you can give us, name, rank, style, whatever, whatever you can give us, even a short bio, and we'll do the rest of the work for that. So,
well, you know what's so funny, Cecil? You've got a school, you're in a marketing, you're in a Snapdragon. So what happened was last week, you know, I got a new phone a few weeks ago and just set up my email on my phone and it took all my contacts. Well, you showed up on my phone. I deleted a whole bunch of stuff today, but you showed up like 4 times.
Oh, yeah.
Because you've got like email after email after email, and now you've got 2 Facebook accounts plus, you know, the Dynamic Dojo page and Snapdragons, the Evolutions there.
Yeah.
You're just all over the place.
Yeah,
that's
it's fun.
That's why your attention span is the way it is.
Huh?
That's why, yeah, right.
All right. Well, we are running out of time. Thanks for joining us, everyone that was listening live. on their phones and on the chat board. Kudos to Daniel Borton, Deb Evans, Lauren Wickline. Todd Rex is on here also. Todd, nice to have you listening. And Paul Nolan. And we hope to have Paul Nolan and Lauren Wickline on the show, on a future show, hopefully in March or April, about whip making. So we talked to a whip master performer, and I expressed some interest in having these guys on. But we have to go, so I'll talk to everyone next week.
Well,
thanks
real
joining
quick,
us, everyone.
Before
oh, we're
go?
Out of time. Sorry.
Oh, no, no, no. Ronda Rousey won that fight, so it'd be really cool to have her on our show next week.
Say that again. I mean, we're recording now, so we can. It'll still be on our show, so we can still talk. No, we
so
can still
Ron,
talk.
Ronda Rousey won her fight last night for an armbar.
Oh, good.
And so it would be really cool if we could get in contact with her to have her on our show.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool. That would be cool, yeah. So if you get a hold of her, let me know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and then we'll schedule them. So I guess, listeners, we're off the air, but if you listen to the archives, we're recording. So we're going to be going over 2 hours right now, but it will show up on the archive. We'll have some guests from Lima Llama, I'm hoping, in March, right?
Yeah, we're supposed to. The last remaining founder of Lima Llama.
Yeah, so that's going to be a great show to listen to. Lima Llama is an art that hails out of Hawaii. We also hope to have a forum show about traditions in martial arts. Are people for them, or are they not needed for the modern venue? So that's going to be an interesting forum, and we hope to get some traditionalists and modern martial artists on the show to discuss whether or not ancient traditions have a place in modern venue. And we don't mean for this show to be, you know, like a mudslinging type thing. We just want to discuss, you know, why some modern studios choose not to do the formal reigi or the bowing in, you know, the use of titles, you know, that kind of thing. We just kind of want to get both sides of the story, you know, in a mature debate fashion. We hope to also have Paul Nolan and Lauren Wickline with us sometime in March, we're hoping. It depends on all our other guests to have
right,
them
right.
on.
I've also contacted Daniel Hicks, the CEO of the Masters Hall of Fame, to give us his background and talk about the Masters and the up-and-coming event.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we also hope to have Lauren Wickline and Paul Nolan about whip making. So
that would
yeah,
be cool.
That'll be cool. And of course, you know, our chat board people, Daniel Borton, Todd Rex, anybody else are welcome to chime in on that forum also. So that'll be great. Awesome. So
excellent.
Yeah. So Lynn, do you have anything to add?
Oh, nope. Not really.
Awesome.
Nothing to add at the moment.
Cool. Awesome. Okay. Well, I guess this is the end of the show.
It is.
So, whoops. Wrong.
3, 2, 1.
Blow up. No.
We're off.
No. No, that was, I hit the wrong thing. This is our ending music. So,
nice.
people listening to the archives, you actually got the last 4 minutes of the show because we cut out about 4 minutes ago. So we hope that all of you listeners enjoyed our interview with Adam Winrich. Probably learned a little bit about whip. And if you're interested in learning about the bull whip, just look up Adam Winrich, W-I-N-R-I-C-H, on YouTube. You'll be able to find a lot of his instructional videos. I also have a bunch of instructional videos on the basic cracks, and you just have to look up my name, Restita de Jesus, on YouTube, and you'll be able to find my channel there. And if you're in Seattle and you want to learn how to crack whip, check out our Seattle Snapdragon Bullwhip Enthusiast Group. We have classes every third Sunday of each month at the School of Acrobatics and New Circus Arts in Georgetown, Washington, here in Seattle. And you're welcome to join us. We'll have whips for you to borrow, and it'll be cool. So, anyhow, that's my plug for all the whips. So, good night, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Thanks, Ben. And thanks, Bob. Talk to y'all next time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.